Let's see what this galaxy-class starship can do.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm looking for the antimatter containment pods.
Over there, in the media corner.
Oh, thanks. Oh yeah, I'm also looking for the auto-destruct.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is our special show for Star Trek The Experience. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Oh, man, the stupid transporter put me on backwards.
Great! Hey, we want to get into this real quick. We just want to let everybody know that we had a wonderful experience at Star Trek The Experience. Imagine that. Behind-the-scenes tour with April A. Bear. She was a wonderful tour guide. We had set this up a couple of months beforehand. And when we were at the New Media Expo, we asked to be taken around the Star Trek Experience, because after 10 years, this thing is coming to an end. Isn't that sad?
Yes, it is sad. And if you're hearing this episode, it's likely the fact that it's already closed. Yeah, and I do want to say that the whole crew and everybody there were very accommodating and letting us run amok on the bridge of the Enterprise. But everybody was awesome. I couldn't say enough for them.
So we want to share this with you. We know you're looking forward to it, not us jabbering on about it. Get that immersive experience. This is part one of two, so you're on track. If you've listened to...
Yeah, and don't forget, we're going to have a video here soon. You know, we're a two-man crew. We can't do anything. Everything.
We're like the Binars.
Yeah, well, one thing at a time.
All right, let's start it up.
There's a start to this whole thing. We've done it backwards.
Oh, we have to go to the official podium. The Experience Secrets Unveiled Backstage Tour, Tour Sign-In Station. Yes, I would like the backstage tour.
Well, it just so happens I'm giving one right now.
Oh, what timing?
Okay, so somebody just... Where'd you go?
Craig. He's hiding behind the podium.
I thought I lost somebody already. Trust me, I've lost people on the tour before. That's because I get so caught up and involved in what I'm doing.
It's good to be passionate about your work.
I was kneeling in front of the Church of Trek.
You know, a lot of people do come here to worship. So it's kind of like Mecca. But yeah. Let me go ahead and start. Welcome to the Star Trek The Experience Backstage Tour. My name is April, and I am really thrilled to be the person that's going to take you behind the scenes of the most amazing themed attraction on the planet and possibly in the entire galaxy. The most amazing thing? It's in a casino in Vegas, go
that's
figure.
Right. Yeah.
But for me, that's very cool because I'm a Vegas native and a longtime Star Trek fan.
Oh.
Yeah, Captain Kirk was my first crush back when he was young and hot. Remember those days? Now, whether you're a Trek fan or not, I think that you will enjoy this backstage tour because it's not just about Trek. It's really more, at least my tours, about how this place was put together and how it works, and I think that you'll find it very, very interesting. We actually opened on January 4th of 1998, and our original opening budget was $70 million. And when you look around, you can see how we obviously spent some of that money. But I'm going to take you back there and show you how we spent the rest of it, and I think you'll agree it's pretty cool. Now, I'm qualified to lead this tour by virtue of the fact that I've been here longer than anybody else. Now, on January 4th of this year, we celebrated our 10th anniversary. But I had already celebrated my 10th anniversary back in August of last year, so I just celebrated my 11th anniversary here.
Oh,
thank you. And I, it's been a wonderful 11 years. I'm an environmental actor. That's what I do. That means simply put, that I act in whatever environment I'm in. I stand right in front of you and pretend I'm somebody else, which sounds easy, but it's not. It takes a lot of background and improv training and that kind of stuff. So when I was hired, I was hired as an actor back in the attractions, which I believe you guys have been through. But they actually brought me on early while this place was still under construction. They needed a couple of actors to test the equipment because the contractors didn't have time to do it. So because we were going to end up doing it anyway, running the equipment, they wanted a couple of us to kind of know enough about it so that we could train the other actors. So that was my job. And I had a hard hat, climbed up and down ladders, got sprayed with hydraulic fluid, you named it, it happened to me. Wow. Needless to say, this place is my home. These people are my family. You know, I really love what I do. And so I started out as an actor back there, and then they brought me out front a couple of years ago, not just to do the backstage tours, but as two of the walk-around aliens that are assigned to the time station. And right there on that banner, you're going to see one of them, that very logical looking Vulcan is Professor T'Pril from the Vulcan Science Academy, and I get to be her a couple of days a week. And when I'm not her, I actually have an Andorian character, and the Andorians are the blue guys with the antenna. That's obviously not me. But I can give you pictures later if you would like to post them on your website so that people can see what it is that I do.
Sure.
So I get to run the gamut from absolutely no emotion, like the Vulcans have, you know, suppressed all their emotions, to way too much because my Andorian character is pretty cranky. Most of the time.
It's good to have an outlet.
Yes, yes.
Get out of here.
Yes, but it's really fun as an actor to get to run that entire gamut of emotion. So anyway, the best job in the galaxy, yeah. And I'm sorry to see it go, you know. Okay, you guys.
We're going to focus on that right now.
All right. You guys ready to boldly go where no one's gone before?
Absolutely.
All right. And by the way, the History of the Future Museum is an actual museum. It's listed as a museum. For several years, we did win museum-related awards. We have a curator who makes sure all of our artifacts are in good repair. This timeline right here, there are 17 panels in this timeline. It's a really good example of the detail that went into making this place. In fact, a couple of years ago, we actually redid the whole timeline for very good reason. When we opened back in 1998, Deep Space Nine was still in production. Voyager was still in production. Then two movies, Insurrection and Nemesis, came out. And finally, we realized that something had happened in the past of the future. And I'm pointing to the Enterprise series that was a prequel to the original series. So at that point, we realized, hey, we're pretty out of date. So it was about 4 years ago that we redid this entire, all 17 panels in the museum. So it is now up to date.
Just one of the many things, I'm sure, around here that's been an evolutionary process.
It hasn't been
static for the last 10 years.
Oh, no, certainly not. And, of course, the major thing being the Borg invasion, which is about 4.5 years old. But when we get there, I'll describe exactly how we did that. Okay, we're in... we're in front of our artifacts. They're props and costumes, but because this is a history of your future, these are actually artifacts. And they are artifacts because they are the real deal.
I was going to ask, are these the real thing? I know Paramount had a big auction a number of years ago.
Right.
And they sold off a lot of the props, but...
Trust me, they have warehouses full of this stuff still.
I figured.
And actually, if you want something, if you're dying for something Star Trek-y, just go onto eBay. They are selling stuff on eBay. Just type in authentic Star Trek costumes. And there's a place called It's a Wrap that is licensed to actually sell these authentic costumes on eBay. But you might have to fight other people for them because they usually fetch a pretty good
price. The eBay way. How hot are the Borg costumes in terms of temperature hot?
You'd have to ask the Borg, but I know that between shows they sit in... recliners, which we call Borga loungers. And I'll show these to you when
I'll
we get there.
In the movie.
Yeah.
That's right. Stand up.
Oh, yeah.
and they have fans on them. So they're going full blast.
They're warm.
That's so, you know, I don't think they've ever stuck a thermometer inside there.
But some of the artifacts in here, let's just describe them for the listeners. They're terrific.
Captain Kirk's actual uniform, although I don't think Shatner's going to be fitting into that.
Not anytime soon.
No. And a Captain Archer's uniform.
Yeah, complete with hat.
That's right. And, of course, is Ephraim Cochran's flight suit that he was wearing when he made first contact with the Borg.
That has to be warm, too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And it was the only one they made for him, by the way, for James Cromwell.
That's the one.
Yeah, and so, interestingly enough, they had to come and get it a couple of years ago when they were doing the final season of Enterprise.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they did a Mirror Universe episode, yes. Which is my favorite episode.
In a
episode.
Mirror Darkly.
Yes. Oh, you know that one. That's my favorite episode.
Yeah.
I love it. And then you know that they opened that episode showing what happened in the Mirror Universe during First Contact. And they actually had to come here from Paramount and get this uniform.
No kidding.
Yes, dressed James Cromwell up, and he came back onto the set. They just shot a couple of key sequences and then re-edited it, because in the Mirror Universe, when the Vulcan goes to shake Cochran's hand, Cochran pulls out a gun, bam!
Spoiler alert.
Something to look forward to.
If you haven't seen the show in the last 5 years.
It's so cool, and that's how the episode opens.
Yeah,
you know?
Donna saw that and went, what? That's not what happened.
Yes, well, hey, it's a different... In the Mirror Universe, they're not as nice as they are in this one. So
everybody's got beards too.
There's lots of little things in here too. We've got the cooling coil from First Contact. We've got Kurok's headband. We've got it just goes on and on. The 3D chess game.
Awesome.
Tribbles. They're not moving.
That's
They're
right.
dead.
A lot of old costume. Nomad. We got Nomad.
Nomad. And that's just really wild. You get a sense of evil when you stand next to things that like that. It's just a character, but. I see Spock's fancy-dancy ski boots.
Yeah, well, those are gravity boots, yes.
The bottle from
the
Generations.
The bottle, that's right. Where they christen the new ship. Yeah, all
Data's
this stuff.
Emotion ship. I mean, it just goes on and on.
All this stuff
Guinan's
is familiar
outfit.
To everybody.
Exactly.
Hair clip.
Giant eyeball clip.
the pads and the tricorders and things are full of stickers, I noticed.
Yeah, well, stickers rather than... I mean, if there was any special effects, there was some electronics in them, but mostly stickers. So if there are special effects that needed to be on the pad, they would put it in post-production.
So those were superimposed later?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, here I am thinking that I had a career in electronics to make high-tech
like
gear.
I said, some of them did have electronics on them. But a lot of times that was just, you know, that was just the thing they held in their hands. And then if there was a shot where they were actually doing something, that was done later.
Cheaper that way than building
it. That way, that's right.
Data's skin arm from First Contact.
First Contact. Yep. The lovely Captain Janeway's uniform there.
What is that, about a size 5?
I think it's about a size minus 2. The girl has no hips.
She has to beam herself into it.
Our fabulous weaponry here.
And lots of hand phasers and phaser rifles.
Yeah.
And
now we get to fire one as part of the tour, right?
A nice try.
Target practice. Yeah. Good luck finding the holodeck, loser.
And then, of course, I'm not sure why the light isn't on here. Oh, there's a light out.
There's one light on. Yep.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because...
What have we got?
This is one of our most revered artifacts here. This is not just any old Mark IV photon torpedo casing. It's actually Spock's coffin.
No, Spock!
And this was the prop that was used in shooting all the scenes in Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock involving Spock's death. And they put him in here and shot him onto the Genesis planet. And of course, nobody's home because he got regenerated.
Except
on the
from
Genesis
some
planet.
Old slimy worms.
Yeah. Well, I think they cleaned it up. It looks
nice job. Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. So we've been very fortunate to have this here for the past 10 years. And of course, then our timeline continues all the way down here.
Just amazing the detail. You know, I do not envy anybody who's trying to write a book or an episode of Star Trek, because you can't do it cold. There's so much research that goes into this very rich storyline from the beginning.
Yes, there is there's 40-something years of canon, you know, and you have to, if you're going to write for Star Trek, you better know that stuff.
The only show I could think of that would be worse would be Doctor Who.
Oh, yes, even more. Yeah, a lot of background there. Plus, Doctor Who keeps changing.
He's changing.
All right. Now, we've got... this is a really good place to view our beautiful models. By the way, these models were built just for us.
Wow.
Yeah, they're far too big to be shooting models.
All right, tell us what we've got.
They were made for their wow factor. Everybody say wow.
Wow. Ooh.
Yeah, I never get tired of looking at them. We have, we have the beautiful Enterprise D.
Mm-hmm. Now, how big is that?
You mean actually big?
Length?
Oh,
weight.
My gosh. That's got to be like 30
I'd say
feet.
About 30 feet.
Yeah. Now, actually, weight, I am not sure. They are made of fiberglass, which is not particularly heavy, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of it, and so there are...
The size of a good-sized boat.
Yeah, and a lot of electronics in there as
fully
well.
Fully internally lit.
So will this be on eBay soon?
We're not sure what's going to happen with them. We hope they go to a good home. I think CBS is trying to find a way to store them somewhere at this point. We have the beautiful Voyager right here, also internally lit. And these are, I know it says right here what their scale
there
is.
There we go.
The scale is...
The 1/50th on the original NCC-1701, which is hanging right out in front of the exhibit.
Right. 1/50th.
I think they are...
Or, except for...
They are... it says on there, but I think they are 1/50th. Yes, the NCC-1701 original... model hanging out there. Now that, actually, I've got a little story about that because it's really interesting.
Wait a minute. That's not the original. The original had cylindrical nacelles.
Right, right. It is the refitted original
for
the original motion picture, and it's based on the shooting model that was used in the first, second, and third movies until, of course, Captain Kirk blew it up, at which point I jumped up in the movie theater and screamed, "No, you can't do that!"
Let me guess what happened when Riker wrecked it.
Oh yeah, something similar. Actually, I think that was Deanna Troi. She's blown up a couple of starships, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Anyway, this one was built by a group of 12 model makers. Lots of model makers worked on each one of these. And the only reason I know that about these, because we really weren't privy to a lot of information about the models.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of months ago, one of my characters, Professor T'Pril, was standing out there in the apron in the front so that people could come by and take pictures of her. Well, this guy walked up to me and told me that he was one of the original model makers, and he had never been here to see it. The last time he saw it, it was in pieces in his studio. And so he pointed out exactly which parts that he had actually made. And he did tell me that when they got the contract from Paramount to build it, they couldn't find like any blueprints or schematics. They're probably in somebody's garage somewhere.
Right.
Paramount couldn't find them.
Or closet.
So they actually end up going to the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., because that's where the original shooting model is hanging. And the curator was nice enough to loan it to them.
Wow.
And they took it to their workshop and made, took measurements off of it. And they had it right next to this one as they were working on it so they could reference back and forth. Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting story about the detail that went into making that.
That's excellent.
Yeah, they are gorgeous.
Yeah, spare no expense.
I'm going to miss them. If I could put one in my garage, trust me, I would.
Yeah, me too.
And here's a little Trekkie trivia right here. Well, these are our cast photos. And the first photo is of the last series film, but because they're in historical order, basically. So Captain Archer and the crew of the NX-01 get first position. Now, NX stands for Naval Experimental. I don't know if your listeners know that. Yeah, so he captained Starfleet's first experimental warp ship. Then when they went to building a fleet, they went to the NCC designation, which a lot of people, I've heard different things, but actually it stands for Naval Construction Contract. And the term naval, of course, Starfleet is an extension of the Navy. They're ships, they're just spaceships. And but the other reason for the term naval is before they had the big shipbuilding stations like Utopia Planitia, where the Enterprise D was built, and McKinley Station, where Voyager was built, they actually built the components of the starships in the Navy construction yards outside of San Francisco. Hence the term Naval Construction Contract.
Wait a minute.
So your listeners
now,
could...
Are you giving me a spoiler about the new movie?
Well, you know what? It's not a spoiler anymore, though. So if you watch the teaser trailer for that, and as they pull back...
That's what I was talking about.
That what you're seeing in the background are the lights of San Francisco.
I didn't notice that. Yes. Now I'm going to see
now
that.
I keep going, how are they building that? And it's not like, crushing on itself.
See, a lot of people think there's a big brouhaha on the web because people are like, no, it was built in space dock. No, it wasn't. I mean, it was put together and finished in space dock because that was the only place they could put all the components together.
Without gravity ruining it.
Right. So, but all the different components were built in the Navy construction yards, and then they shipped them all up into space.
Now, I also noticed in this picture that it is an experimental ship. That's why they were always messing with the chair. Yes. Look at Archer's feet.
He can't barely.
He can't touch the ground.
It looks like he needs a shave and a haircut, doesn't it? Because that reminds me of a barber chair. Yeah.
That's a good one.
T'Pol, come here.
Then, of course, we have cast photos of all the other ones, the original series, the Next Generation.
No Wesley. I got rid of him.
And, of course, Deep Space Nine and the lovely Captain Janeway, the crew of Voyager, every guy's favorite right there, 7 of 9.
And you can tell the photography has increased in quality over the years because the Enterprise photo we saw first has
much better quality than this.
As you go up, the graininess kind of disappears, but that one is the best.
That's right. More megapixels, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. So, and by the way, when we first opened, this picture wasn't here. They had the first season cast photo.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I guess Jeri Ryan wasn't really happy about that because she was here for our opening party.
Oh,
yeah. And I guess 3 weeks later, we ended up with this one. So I guess when she talks, people listen. But we had a 24-hour opening party back on January 4th of 1998. So, and everybody who was anybody with Trek showed up.
Oh, that would have been terrific. Now, do they still show up? That begs the question that the Las Vegas Hilton hosts the Star Trek convention every year.
Yes, they do.
And this isn't going to be here next year. What impact do you anticipate?
I don't know. I am not sure if the convention is going to stay. That's a different, we don't really have anything to do with that. But if you check with Creation Entertainment, they'll let you know, what venue they're going to use, if they're going to stay here, if they're going to find another venue. But yes, it's been a lovely little interaction with us for the past couple of years. When they first started doing them here, the Creation started doing them here, they actually were somewhere else. But then they went, why aren't we right next to the experience, though?
Right, because then, the celebrities who make the appearance can show up here and help you out that way. It just seemed like a great synergy.
Right.
It's like what happened to the Deadheads after Jerry Garcia died.
Well, they're traveling around. That's all they did. They just kind of wander. Oh, I do want to show you something.
So that's what we can expect out of the Star Trek fans, just kind of wander around aimlessly?
Around Vegas looking for T'Pril. Okay, this is, I wanted to point out this Andorian guy right here because if you remember, when Andorians first showed up, it was in the original series.
Yeah.
Now, the producers hated the makeup. They thought they looked ridiculous, but they did talk about Andorians for the next 30 years. You just never saw one. Right. And that's why, because they were kind of unwieldy and weird looking. Then in Enterprise, when they realized that Andorians were founding members of the Federation, they thought, well, let's interweave that whole story, which is one of my favorite parts of it. Oh, it was wonderful. Plus, they used wonderful actors like Jeffrey Combs and Susie Plaxton. Yep. And, so
he shows up a lot, doesn't he?
And so does Susie. Susie has played, I don't know, 5 or 6 different characters over the years. Yes, Jeffrey Combs, wonderful character actors, really nice people, too. Anyway, Michael Westmore was commissioned, the makeup artist, was commissioned to figure out a way to make those antenna move. And basically it was radio controlled. The actor did not control the movement of them. So they were off to the side, somebody with a joystick was moving those things around. Well, when we got permission to do Andorians here, they realized that they couldn't do it the same way because we can't have somebody following us around with a joystick.
Right.
So they tried to make a mechanism that sat under the wig and then ran down to the hand and you could control the movements with the hand. Unfortunately, it was really cheesy. Well, number one, it weighed 2 pounds, which doesn't sound like much, but when it's sitting on your head, you end up with a migraine in about 20 minutes. Okay. Right. Right. The other thing was the antenna could only go in one direction, so you'd hit the button and they'd be like that.
Circular pattern and you'd look more like a search, a radar scope.
One would break and so one would be standing still and the other one would be going like that. And then to top it all off, you could hear them. You could hear the mechanism. So it'd be like, and people would be like, yeah, I can hear your antenna. So that only lasted maybe a week or so. And finally, we were just like, no. We'll just not have them move, just attach them to the wig, and we'll come up with, we're actors. We can come up with the reasons why they're not moving.
Didn't even notice. The gentleman who was around the last couple of days, he was so in character that wasn't a factor.
It's not a factor. Sometimes it is. But, we just have, we have standard answers that we've come up with that have worked over the years that basically...
I have a cold.
That's, they have a cold. I have a try that one, but I like that. I like that. Too much mucus. Plugs them up. I know. That kind of thing, you know. So we've standardized our answers over the years, but we actually have a good time. And so if people ask us, you know, why they don't move, we just come up with...
Well, I'll never make a good Vulcan. I have too many smart aleck answers.
No, but the way they articulated those in Enterprise really did add a lot to the character. I mean, they added to the emotion when I'm losing the character name. Jeffrey Combs.
Shran,
thank you. Yeah, if he was agitated, you know, they stood up straight in an aggressive posture. When he was, you know, loathing the death of his wife, they droop. It was a neat experience to see that.
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters, and Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Okay, April, you've taken us out of the public realm and into the authorized personnel only section.
That's right, because we're special. We're now in one of the corridors that crisscross around the attraction. And when you came through, particularly on the Klingon side as a guest, you probably were like, where am I? You know, where am I in reality? Where are you nowhere in reality? You know, and that's why, because we want to kind of throw you off. And so it's very convoluted up here. We don't want you to know where you are because we want you to put aside the reality of life and just kind of go with the flow. We're in what's called an immersive attraction.
Quite immersive.
Yes. Yeah, and Paramount worked very hard on creating this reality. You know, so even when you step onto, step downstairs into the guest area down there with the Quarks and the retail area, you still feel like you've stepped out of the 21st century into the 24th century, and that's the whole idea. And particularly up here, you feel like you have become part of the Star Trek universe. In fact, if you go through, you realize you're the most important part of the Star Trek universe, because without you, it won't happen.
That's right.
You know? And that's why I think it's been so successful for all these years. Now, there's some things on the walls that are of interest. Some of the original design concept artwork is up here. Yeah, anytime you want somebody to spend $70 million on something, you better have a pretty good idea. That's right. Pretty good idea what you're going
to
end up doing.
I'm talking to my wife about some of the themes for the other hotels and stuff. They got to seem silly on paper, you know, to try and pitch, you know, like on a circus or something like that, to get somebody to throw a lot of money at it. So, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. You have to have a very, very clear idea. And this was well thought out. I mean, it wouldn't have worked for so long if it's not that well thought out. And then down here we have just a few of the hundreds of schematics and blueprints that were generated for the attraction. And it actually took 5 years to build this place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 3 years just to design it. And the reason for that is because they had never done it. Paramount had never done anything like this before, you know, and they wanted... Star Trek fans are pretty picky, you know.
Geez.
So yeah, I do think so. They wanted it to be just that perfect, you know, the perfect place for them to come. It's Star Trek Mecca here, you know, and that's because they did a very, very good job in the planning stages. But they also had to try to figure out how to do things that had only been done in post-production, as transporting you. Yeah, at this point in time, people do not sparkle, disappear, and show up somewhere else.
What?
Sorry, I hate to break that
spoiler
to you. But they had to use, at the time, 20th century technology, and it's the same technology we use today. It's very, very simple technology, and it works well, and it needed to work well for over a decade, you know, so they had to come up with a way to do that, and I think they were very, very successful.
Are you going to tell us how they actually do that?
If you're really nice to me, I might actually show you.
Remember, this won't be
here. I'll buy you a drink.
Oh, don't tempt me.
I mean, my wife has seen it, what now, 3-4 times, and you still don't know how you get transported to the...
Oh, well, I guess we'll have to show you. Yeah, and when they built the Borg invasion, they had to figure out how to simulate phaser fire, you know, so I mean, there were things that they had to do that had only been done in post-production. Plus, they had to figure out the story and which parts of the ship they wanted you to see and that kind of thing. So it did take quite a while. Now, actually, when we opened back in 98, we did not have the Borg invasion.
Right.
We opened with two Klingon encounters. So we had two of the exact same ride. Now, people go, well, why would you do that? Well,
throughput.
Well, trust me, when hundreds of thousands of people are waiting outside the door for you to open, you know, you don't want them to have to stand in line for a couple of days just to do a 20-minute ride. So what we did when we opened is we had two of the same thing. We had two transporters, two bridges.
One transporter, two.
That's right. That's right, on this sketch right here.
So what is the date on that? October 21st,
1996.
This is later in the planning stages.
Right. Yeah, because they first... Honestly, they only had one side originally, and then they were, you know, when Landmark and Scenic Tech came, they were like, you're going to have to consider the fact that all these people are going to be there, and they're not going to be happy.
Waiting in line for 3 weeks.
I mean, yeah.
I waited a long time.
Yes. Oh, when did you come? 2000. Oh, yes. Yeah, and at the time, even with two rides going full blast, full tilt, you know, we could put between 700 and 800 people through an hour. And we did that for quite a while. But there was a point at which we did not need to do that anymore. Obviously, in the life of any theme park, the ridership goes down. So in order to bring ridership up, plus
new
give them something else, yes, you have a new attraction. So we shut down one side. I can't say we gutted it, but we pretty much took it down to the bare minimum, and we kind of repurposed a lot of the things. They didn't want to have as much of an outlay of expenditure as they did at the beginning, you know. So it took 18 months to design the Borg Invasion and only 8 months to build. Once they put that wall up and, brought it up 8 months later, it's an entirely new ride. But we've had, well over 3 million people come through during the past 10 and a half years. I think we're working on moving towards 4 million. So by the time we get out of here, I don't know what the final count will be, but you can always call and ask. But yes, we've had a lot of people come.
That's impressive. For the size of that, the person count, there's a lot of attractions at amusement parks, whether it be Six Flags or Cedar Point or what have you, that can't make that claim.
Right. And, that's just who's come through the ride. There are people that have come down into Quirks to eat and buy things in retail that either can't or didn't want to come up and do the ride. So there's many millions more that, we don't even count in those numbers. So, yes, many millions of people have enjoyed it. Okay, we are sneaking onto the Enterprise D through the back door. I know you didn't know that.
That's right.
I didn't know the Enterprise had a back door, but it's right here. And here we are.
I did notice that exit signs in the 24th century look strikingly familiar
unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to exist if it were not for those exit signs, because how the county is. They're very, very careful about that, and we do have fire exit plans and that kind of stuff. But we did get to kind of theme them Star Trek-y, So I just say they lead to the, Jeffrey's tubes, like a shuttle bay, or the
throw them out the airlock.
Or the airlock, yes, and it's very cold in space.
So. Yeah.
Wear your jammies.
So we've got we're standing in a hall that looks like a typical utility.
Where we are is at the back of deck 4. Here, you know what? Let me go shut this door. Could you shut that door, David? So I can give him the whole.
He's breaking the loop.
Thanks, David.
It's breaking the illusion.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if he's going to take a picture, I want to take a picture. But it looks like with the door closed.
I do recall seeing that door.
Yes. But it does, when the door's closed, it really doesn't look too much. See, that's how it looks, generally.
We got to push that big conduit thing in front of it.
Okay, so here we are in the saucer section at the back of deck 4, which, if you know your Galaxy-class starships, is where the main shuttle bay is.
Yeah.
And if you look up, you can actually see the curvature of the saucer section as it goes around. And we have a very simple way to make it look like it goes on forever. Mirrors. That's a mirror right there and a mirror right there. But they're very good mirrors. And unless you're standing still and staring at them, you really don't notice. And really, the best illusions are the simplest ones, as you will see as we go throughout the tour. And just nice mirrors. And so people think that this place just goes on forever, which is the idea. They're trying to put into your mind how enormous these Galaxy-class starships must be, and I think they did a really, really good job.
And in reality, this set is, probably 60 feet long?
It's about 50-something feet. I measured it once because when I was up here as an actor, I used to walk between shows, and so I had to know how far it was to walk a mile. So I actually measured it. It's about 50 feet.
Because Vulcans don't wear pedometers.
Yeah, that's right. Not during...
It's not logical.
That's right.
Not when they're on duty.
Anyway. Yeah.
And we've got a turbo lift. Do these control panels actually operate the turbo lift?
There are actually things that do work on these panels, but they're just like lights to tell you where the turbo lift is at any point. Yeah.
Look, show-up-y.
Show-up-y.
Yeah. Look.
It's got an IP address somewhere.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm trying to think. Turbo door, okay. Yeah, like that's if the door is at the bridge, that light's on, that kind of thing. So,
cool. Yeah. So you get some status off of these.
Some status off of these panels.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're in the typical L Cars interface. It's pretty neat looking at these.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, all these things were created by Michael Acuda. All these, they're called Acudagrams, by the way, in his honor.
Oh.
Yeah, because he designed them, and now you know your iPod has stuff like this on it. But back then. You know, nobody had ever seen anything like this before, so it's pretty cool. Yeah. But I love how Trek actually inspires a lot of the things that, you know, technology uses today. That's right. All those things came out of, you know, kids watching Star Trek and going, I'm going to make one of those, you know. And sure enough, they grew up and became an engineer.
I'm not
Trek,
but I'm still working on my lightsaber.
Body piercings.
But, yeah, you know, people come up to me all the time. In fact, I brought the Society of Women Engineers through on a tour. Mm-hmm. And these women were awesome. And they just were so involved in this. And almost all of them were Trekkies, you know. And
what do you think got them started?
That's it. You know, it's been an inspiration to people over the past decades. Now, this actually, everything that you see in the Klingon Encounter side had to be signed off by all the people who had worked on Next Gen, because the Klingon Encounter side is based on the Next Gen series. Yeah. So, like Herman Zimmerman, production, supervising production coordinator, something like that. He's kind of responsible for the look of Trek. And he was here, and he went over this place with a fine-tooth comb, very picky. A lot of this stuff actually came from the sets, the fabulous 24th century plastic cargo pieces that are decorating our set. We used to decorate these sets at Paramount, but they were done filming on Next Gen, so they just gave us this stuff. A lot of the hidden gems in Star Trek are in the set design.
Yep.
For instance, there's stickers on these pieces
that
say where they came from, where they're going, what's in them, that kind of thing. Well, what's in them could be anything from arms and legs to eyeballs to live targ, that kind of thing.
A kidney.
It's that, yes. Yes. Medical waste,
there's a giant
I don't know.
Hamster in that ball.
Running around a little circle. That's right. But and they could come from anywhere and be going to anywhere, pardon me, in the Star Trek universe or not in the Star Trek universe. In fact, that one has a sticker on it that says that its point of origin was Babylon 5.
Really?
Yes.
That's kind of cool.
Isn't that awesome?
That's great. And you know, the public,
they'll never,
very few,
unless I point it out, they don't know what to look for. Now, of course, a lot of Trekkies come through here and say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, some of them are just numbers, and some, the it's the little tiny lettering that says something silly, but I'll point those out to you. A lot of Trekkies come through and they say, well, wait a minute, wasn't this ship destroyed on Viridian 3? Yes, it was. But when you come into the Klingon Encounter attraction, you're actually pulled through a rift in the space-time continuum.
And put before Viridian 3.
Well, you know, you could end up anywhere, basically, anytime. So,
I like how we end up at the end in kind of like where the staff work.
That's right. You end up in the maintenance area.
In the maintenance area. Yeah. How did we get done?
So for 10 years, this has been the last gasp of the Enterprise D, live and well in Vegas. Yeah. All right. Now, this wall was not originally here, and this corridor was actually twice as long as it was.
Okay.
This is the wall they put up and reconfigured the other side into the Borg invasion. And so when we go through this door, we're stepping off the Enterprise D 6 or 7 years into the future and halfway across the galaxy to the Delta Quadrant, because that's where Copernicus Station is. So let me move this fabulous thing. It looks heavy.
It's about a 2-foot diameter conduit piping. We have a company in Appleton that makes these. Not gray, they're all black. Okay. But they're to tie together underground drain tile and things.
Are you going to fly the room for me?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is the magic door we had to close to maintain
door.
The illusion.
Right. So of course we step through the side. Oh, there's a show going. I mean.
And poof, we've got the Borgo loungers.
Right.
Photo op.
They are just two chairs that look like they came out of some bachelor's apartment.
That's right. Well, the bachelors sit in them all day. So, and those are the fans I was talking about, you know, and they usually point them right at important parts of their body.
They're bachelors after
That's
all.
That's right. They want to keep those parts cool.
There's a backstage secret you won't get.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you're wearing 40 pounds of latex, trust me, it's a...
I always thought that was the neatest costume, especially the refit ones for First Contact.
Yes, yeah.
Those, the board costumes were very intricate and complex with the head makeup and the whole thing.
Yeah, they are. But like I said, they're very, very heavy. I will tell you a secret that Michael Westmore, his staff, who was... Michael Westmore's been here several times. He's really cool. He's the Emmy-winning makeup designer that pretty much designed all that stuff. He said that when they first did the board costumes for the First Contact movie, that there was nowhere for them to...
do their business.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So they were out. I guess they would have to go out of the studio and stand over a grate.
Oh, poor guys.
Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Technorama.
Now, they are running a test cycle here, so you can hear that sound. That's the fans going on.
Okay.
And one of the things that they're... Well, obviously, it's very, very different here, because the whole feeling over here is completely different. The Klingon encounter side's like being in an episode of Next Generation.
Right.
This side is like being in a haunted house with Borg coming after you.
Right.
So the feeling is completely different, and they did that by a couple of different means.
Sure.
First they did was lower the ceiling, but if you look up here,
there's a Borg up there, isn't there?
There's a Borg over there, actually. Yeah. But that's the porthole that where the stars were shining through on the other side.
Uh-huh. Oh, for crying out loud, there's remnants of the old bridge.
That's right. They just actually just blacked it out and hung these big piping runs here. And the lighting effect is completely different on this side. And it's really cool when it changes from Starfleet Red Alert to once the Borg assimilate that screen.
Yeah. And so he's sitting in his Borgo lounger until he's cute and comes out from behind
comes
that
out
panel.
Comes behind the thing, assimilates the screen. Yes.
I'm oriented now. I was trying to figure out where we're at.
So
the chairs are right, the lazy boys are
right back there. Yeah.
Don't you want to go one more time?
I hung back the second time because remember we were so far in the front the first time, so I hung back the second time. And there was a wheelchair in front of me, so I wasn't moving quite fast enough. And all of a sudden, he picked up his pace. And I was like,
well, you know, if they see you just standing there, they'll come after you. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, get a move on, you know? Yeah. So, yes.
This is serious.
I took out my cell phone and went, hey, Mr. Borg, I've got some tasty technology. Fetch. I was not compliant in any way with this exhibition.
I'm sure they were talking about you afterward. Who was that guy?
The idiot was trying to throw me a BlackBerry.
After 10 years, we still get some of those.
Of course. But as you can see, if you look closely, you can see that there's a little bit of smoke that's pumped out here.
Yeah.
And that is for two reasons. Number one, it kind of adds to the ambiance here, you know, because as the lighting changes to Borg green...
And you're under attack.
Yeah, you're under attack. So it would be you know, natural to have some kind of smoke in the air. But on this side, they have a phaser fire, you know, the phaser guns fire. Yes, the pistols and the...
And you got to see them.
And you have to see that whole beam. And you can see a beam better if there's little particles in the air. So a very simple, once again, but very effective technique for getting the whole beam into view.
That's cool.
So, yes, it's very cool. And let's walk down here because I want to show you our man lift. Now, that's a little sexist.
I like the burned out corridor when you first come through. You always have to be looking around going, what am I missing? What am I missing?
Yeah, you got to come through here a couple of times before you see everything.
Oh, yeah, this is where the girl got hauled away.
That's right. This is called a man lift, but like I said, that's a little sexist because all of us that act up here are trained to do this. And at some point, you know, this person's trying to get that door open so you can get beyond that door and onto the shuttle. But unfortunately, as soon as he or she is successful, a Borg drone, there is a Borg drone up in the ceiling, and he sticks his arm out and just grabs.
Is that an actor?
That's an actor.
Okay, because I saw one.
Static. No, no, that's, no. I thought you meant this,
Oh,
there's, the arm is right there.
There's,
just the arm.
So we're standing, for the listener's benefit, we're standing in front of a 2-foot platform with a very mocked up console. Yeah, and during the act, this person is trying to open a bulkhead door to let the passengers through, the ride attendees, if you will. But they're standing in front of what looks like a seat cushion almost. Is there a hook on the back of their costume?
Yes, they are actually wearing a harness under their uniform with a carabiner in the back. And it's big, it's about this big, carabiner.
Big
and
buckle,
it just hooks right into that D-ring up there.
Okay.
And then this is air-powered. This is not hydraulic-powered. It's, it's an air...
That's how you get it to move so fast.
Right. And at the certain point, the arm comes
down. The robotic arm comes down, looks like grabs her. I missed the arm. But the effect was good. It's like,
there's a little trip switch in the back of the arm. So if the operator of it doesn't feel safe for whatever reason, they don't have to be assimilated. Yeah. Yes, it's actually, it is actually in his palm or kind of right here. And you just reach up and grab the trip switch, and this whole mechanism just goes right up into the ceiling, and they end up right there where the arm is, but the arm is above them at that point. So,
they could go, you know, trip and go, "Ooh, that was close."
Yes. Yeah, and that
You'd have to act your way out of that.
That has happened a couple of times.
Yeah. The second tour was a slightly different than the first tour.
Was it different actors?
And it was different actors.
Okay, so you're going to get a little bit different performance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have, that's, you know, great. We have standards that we have to live up to as actors back here. But everybody's a little bit different, you know.
It depends
so.
On the audience interaction.
Yeah.
The audience interacted on the
We saw
the
one where
one.
They were picking on one of the... They got David.
David,
you know, they,
in the Next Generation one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow he became the elected leader and Picard's progenitor.
Yeah.
It was
and
great.
One, one of the kids running through the through this one had a phaser and a Star Trek fleet uniform. And he said, "Is this considered an electronic device?" And she's like, "Don't point that at me."
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's, you know, that's what improv is all about, is acting in the moment, you know. And so, of course, yes, at no two groups that come through here are the same. You know, some of them are half asleep, and some of them are, yeah. But by the time the Borg come after them, they're awake, you know.
And they're drunk.
Yes, and people are, yes, we get that a lot. Some people are moving through a different, you know, at a different pace. Some people are very slow. Some groups are slow. But the show is at the same pace, you know, so you kind of have to hurry them along.
Yeah, we got a bit of that, you know, hurry, please, don't wait. We've got to move quickly.
Well, of course, the Borg are coming after you, so that makes sense, in the context of what we're doing. Yeah.
You can't yell at your guests on most other rides.
No, you can't, but here you can. Let's go over here because I want to...
More neat stuff.
Show you this.
A lot of the walls have these futuristic barcode labels
that's
on
right.
them.
That's more of that cool stuff.
So
we
want
to come down here and see the corridor. Now, if we can't go down the corridor, they won't let us go down the corridor.
How far does it extend?
Well, actually, it just goes right around that corner.
Let me guess. This is repurposed from the next gen.
Oh, good job. That's exactly the word.
See the legs on the floor?
That's Ensign Deadman right there. On the floor. We're pretty sure he's wearing a red shirt.
Yeah.
Yes, anyway, this corridor used to lead to the bridge on this side of the attraction because this used to be the Klingon encounter side.
Okay.
The bridge is still over there in pristine condition, and that's the bridge we use if you get your picture taken on the captain's chair or if you get married on the bridge of the Enterprise. And we've actually
it's
won...
It's our 20th anniversary. Is that close enough?
That's you know what? Yes, we have you know, what's that called?
When you renew your
vows. Yeah, renewing your vow ceremony. And we have...
Re-upping.
Big weddings, little weddings, you know, weddings where everybody's dressed up like Star Trek and weddings with, you know, the tux and the bridal gown. And, you know, you can have aliens there observing your vows. And that's right. So it's pretty awesome.
Or it's a dead man.
Yeah.
He's my best man.
You can prop him up. No, actually, they were first... considering just blocking this off because instead of going down this way, now the people walk out that way.
Right.
But
they thought, well, we got this whole corridor here. Might as well do something with it. So the techs got to rip it up. Oh, I can't have you go down there, unfortunately.
I was just looking. I'm like,
yeah. There's, well, there's just too much you could trip over.
No, I was just wanting to peek around.
Those are glorified Christmas lights.
That's right. That's really all they are. But they had a great deal of fun, you know, and they got to, like,
airbrush some.
That's right.
Shot.
But see, when we came through
marks,
this ride, I was trying to peek, and I was like, well, how far does that go?
Yeah, it's just like right around that corner. So where you see it, that's the end of it, and then it goes that way, and the bridge is over there.
So mirrors this time.
No.
Nope.
Nope. This is not a mirror. This is an actual corridor. Oh, nice. Hang on.
Christmas lights and dryer vent. Now, this is where the guests normally come in and get their orientation.
We kind of went backwards through this ride.
The first impression I got out of when they said stand in the magic triangle, I was thinking of the Gamesters of Triskelion. Where's Shauna and how many Quattlers do I get on this ride?
There's no thrall here, unfortunately. But no, we're in the orientation chamber where you start your Borg invasion adventure. And this actually used to be the transporter room on the side of the attraction.
So they refitted this room too.
Yeah, but they took all that out, and they ripped up the floor, and underneath the floor in here they put butt kickers.
You can, for the rumbling effect.
Right,
I thought those were in the seats in the
No, no. Didn't you feel it when the Borg were coming in?
Yes.
You could feel the floor rumbling in here.
I was referring to the other butt kickers.
Oh, the butt kickers in the seats. Yes.
Oh, those are actual butt kickers.
Yes.
They actually kick your butt.
Yes.
That's just the name of the subwoofer that makes, it not only makes a low rumbling sound, but it actually vibrates whatever is on top of it.
Those chairs, you know, what did I do? Before I sat down in those chairs, I was feeling around going, this has to be like Disney. There's got to be, you know, make sure you're not going to get spit in the face.
Yeah,
I was
really
feeling.
Can't
I was prepped.
Feel
you
can go in there and look at them. And when we're done in here, yeah.
But yet you sit down, and during the show, you get a poke in the back, a poke in the leg. The Borg are trying to simulate you through this chair, going.
Yeah, depending on how you're sitting in that chair.
Yeah, I said, don't slouch. You could get a kick in the jimmies or something.
Yeah. But on this side, of course, you have something in your DNA that resists Borg nanoprobes. So you're brought here through the temporal rift and through a scanner into the orientation chamber. And the holographic doctor from Voyager comes on that view screen to tell you how you could save humanity. But that's when the Borg show up and try to kill you because they're not very happy about you being here. So they start ripping apart Copernicus Station with a tractor beam looking for you. And that's when, of course, the butt kickers kick in. You know?
So when they built this attraction, they had to call in Robert Picardo and all the other actors to refilm that?
Yeah, well, that was filmed at Paramount.
Okay.
Those parts.
I mean, not here, but for the attraction some 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Well, it would have been, let's see, because this has been open since March of 04. And that stuff took about 18 months.
So it was still close enough to the Voyager time frame.
Because Voyager ended in 01. And, you know, they probably started talking about what they were going to do in the next 18 months and then 18 months to create it. So it was within a couple of years of the end of Voyager.
Yeah, and where I live in near Charlotte, North Carolina, there's Carowinds.
Yes.
And Paramount owned Carowinds for several years. And they had the Borg ride, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But they had some video on the screens as you're waiting to go in of different people and clips from the show and stuff. I don't know how much original content they did, but I saw some of that, like you're talking about with Robert Picardo.
Yeah, that was actually, everything here was filmed just for this, basically. So they brought Alice Krieg back to play the Borg Queen.
Oh,
she's awesome. I love her. And they actually brought Janeway back, you know, to film it. And there's somewhere, I don't know if it's on a website somewhere, but there is it was attached to some movie, some Star Trek movie, or some, how they do seasons of, like, Voyager and stuff like that. They put them out. There is a behind-the-scenes making of the Borg invasion.
Really?
Yeah, where they talk about this. So if you can access
an extra on a DVD or something?
Yes. Yeah, it's a DVD, little surprise extra there.
We're gonna have to look for that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where it is, but if you can find that, there's a lot of information about how they put this together.
YouTube? I'm kidding.
As an actor, how you switch between a couple of different characters?
Oh yeah, I do everything related to acting.
How we do a couple of characters on our show? It's just voice characters, but I have a really hard time, especially to get from point A. it seems like when you watch the early Star Trek Next Generations, you know, it took a little while for the characters to evolve, and then they were pretty solid.
Yes.
But when you're switching between characters, that's got to be a little tricky.
You know, up here in the, well, I can only speak for what I do, which is up here in the rides, which is fairly scripted. You know, so I mean, you've got a script for this character, that character. I mean, there's like maybe 10 characters that are up here between these two rides. And that's scripted, and, you know, as long as you understand Starfleet protocol and you know, what it is that Starfleet officers do, you know, they don't freak out and run around and slam against the wall, you know, that kind of stuff. So you can pretty much do any of these, you know, you're maintaining, because a Starfleet officer has certain characteristics. You know, they might be afraid, and you might see a little hint of that, but that Starfleet training kicks in. Mm-hmm. So whether it's on that side or this side, I'm not saying they're exactly the same. They're not, you know. This side's a little more free-for-all, you know, because Borg are right there chasing you, so that's a little creepy, you know. Plus, it's okay to scream if the Borg assimilates you and pulls you up into the ceiling, you know, that kind of stuff. But on the other side, no, it's all, boom, we're going to get through this, or you're going to be fine, I'm going to make sure. So no matter what character, no matter what Starfleet character you're playing up here, it's pretty much, you can pretty much have one persona for those. And that's why the show is different, because people switch out roles, and then that persona becomes that character.
Well, also, it's easy to immerse yourself with the environment, because look around.
Right.
I mean,
that's true.
Right,
yeah. And the costume, I mean, when you're out doing the improv stuff among the fans at Quark, and whatnot, the costume's got to lend to that. You don't go, I'm a Vulcan. I forgot.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't ever forget who I am. Thank goodness. But in fact, one of the girls at base, they have a big bank of cameras, you know, all throughout, and the monitors are right there, so the girls can watch what's going on in the attraction. And one of the operations. Base people said to me, you know, April, I'd love to watch you walk down the corridor, because as you go from camera to camera, as you're walking out onto the floor, she says, I can see you change as you're walking down the corridor from April to by the time you open that door and go out onto the floor, you're not April anymore.
That's perfect.
So obviously, you know. Yes, it's
you're a pro.
It's something that I've been doing for a long time, and it's like I know when to start being that other person. And trust me, when I'm out there, I am not April. You can walk up to me and call me April. I don't respond. I don't turn. I don't what, you know. I mean, because I'm not. And for half an hour at least, it's half hour minimum, I'm out on the floor in character as somebody else, you know. And that's that takes a lot of doing.
April,
but
your costume's on fire. What?
Well,
who?
Now that's never happened to me. But... All right, follow me.
We hope you've enjoyed that behind the scenes tour of Star Trek: The Experience. We're so excited.
Behind the stage tour?
It was behind the stage. Very strange, walking from one place, one world into the other. It was a whole lot of fun. Remember, this is part one of two. There's another part coming up in about a week. If you've already downloaded it, well, good for you. Have fun with that. We do look forward to putting the video out for you. Stay tuned, keep subscribed, or come back to the site in a few days. You'll get everything. There's a whole lot more, a lot more fun to enjoy. I mean, just April takes us where no podcaster has gone before.
Yeah, that's right.
We never asked. I don't think they did have any podcasters there before.
Yeah, if they were in secret.
They weren't as well known as us? What are you saying?
Yeah, everybody knows us.
They weren't as pronounced? Hey, we just wanted to say that we appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. You can call the listener line, 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. Or email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. You can always visit the website, www.chuckchat.com, for all the other good stuff that goes along with this, including regular blog posts from Mad Marv. He does a great job every day, just about every day, providing us with some wacky tech, science, sci-fi news. It's a great time. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with Farpoint Media and a whole host of other great podcasts at farpointmedia.net. If you're getting this show the old-fashioned way, by clicking on the link on the website, consider subscribing to get the show automatically delivered to you for free. That's a price everybody can afford. Drop either one of us an email at technorama@chuckchat.com if you'd like more information. Tell a friend about Technorama, we'd appreciate it, and I'm sure they would too. And until next time, a binary high five.
101. Oh, look, Chuck, I'm doing the thing with the fingers.